And this is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Aaron, wasn't that drummer for Yes, Alan White? Wasn't he just in the news a few weeks or a couple of months ago because his drums got stolen?
I don't know about that story.
Oh, you were on paternity leave, probably.
Yeah, I didn't
watch. Yeah, I think it was when you were gone. But yeah, he was just in the news because somebody stole a drum set, and I don't know how they've got it, but they stole a drum set that he had actually used in a lot of really well-known recordings, and he was very sad and wanted to get it back. So,
oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, used on John Lennon's "Imagine," the drum kit.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Stolen. Oh wow.
Hey, and by the way, "Imagine."
I know you don't like that song, right? I've heard
worst song.
I've heard
worst song in music history. Yeah,
it's a hot take.
I'm full of them. I love a lot of John Lennon solo stuff. Just not that.
Okay.
Hey, can we get some yes, Andrew? I should have asked you during the break. And don't make it Owner of a Lonely Heart. Roundabout.
Darn it.
Roundabout.
All right, we got some roundabout.
Give me some roundabout here. I want to hear Alan White pounding the drums there. But Yes was always known as a prog rock band. So this is good stuff. It's too slow. I shouldn't have asked for this one.
Hang on.
Yeah, step forward here a little bit. Ah, too slow. This is good radio, isn't it, Aaron?
Very good. I'm feeling it, yeah.
There we go. Now it's about to kick in.
There he is.
There's Alan White. Do we know what he died from?
Just a brief illness is all it's saying right now. I'm not sure.
Yeah, just 72.
Yeah.
Man, fairly young. All right. Aaron, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Here, bring this up a little bit here. The words will make you out and out. I'll spend the day away. Call it morning, driving through the sun and in and out the valley. There's Alan White right there. Little Phil. Giving you a little Phil. I don't know music lingo. I think that's accurate. Man, 72 used to sound kind of old to me. Now it sounds like tomorrow to me. 72. You know, like Ray Liotta. Chris Martin's filling in for Nicole today. Are you a Goodfellas fan at all, Chris?
Oh, yeah, of course. Have you met people that aren't Goodfellas fans?
Yeah, I know some people who thought it was too violent for them.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
The soundtrack on Goodfellas is amazing.
It's the that's the hallmark of Scorsese movies. But yes, that soundtrack in particular, the chase where, or the scene where Henry Hill, I had Henry Hill, the real Henry Hill, on my show, gosh, as many years. He died quite a while ago now. But he was a fascinating guest because he played the part of the mobster. And Ray Liotta was only 67. He died in his sleep in the DR while filming a movie. And I saw a picture of him that was taken about 3 weeks ago with his fiance, and he looked fine in that. But, yeah, my all-time favorite movie is Goodfellas.
See, I was cooking dinner that night. I had to start braising the beef, pork butt, and veal shanks for the tomato sauce.
And tomatoes. Aaron, I'm going to make them all. I'm going to make all this meat.
In fact, who's the artist behind the music in this scene? Do you know, Chris?
Yeah, it's Nielsen jumping the fire.
Nielsen Schmielsen.
It was Michael's favorite. I was making ziti with the meat gravy, and I'm planning to roast some peppers over the flames, and I was going to put on some string beans with some olive oil and garlic, and I had some beautiful cutlets that were cut just right that I was going to fry up before dinner just as an appetizer. So I was home for about an hour. Now, my plan was to start the dinner early so Karen and I could unload the guns that Jimmy didn't want and then get the package for Lois to take to Atlanta for her trip later that night.
Who's been carving their initials in the tomatoes?
No, I kept looking out the window, and I saw that the helicopter was gone.
Michael, keep an eye on the sauce, all right? Stay here with your own
wife. It is amazing how the feeling of paranoia was captured in that scene, and it's good stuff. But yeah, Ray Liotta, he's also Shoeless Joe Jackson in Eight Men Out. Eight Men Out or Field of Dreams?
I'm not sure of that, but he's also amazing in the movie Something Wild. Do you remember that movie?
I never saw that one.
Oh, he's really scary and really great in that.
And since we're chatting, since we texted each other about this, you sent me a video this morning. They have now certified a guy who surfed the highest hill or the highest hill, the highest wave in history, 86 feet. And he did it a while back, but they've now certified the height of this wave. And it is just, I can watch, there's a surfing documentary. I don't remember if it was Netflix or Amazon Prime, but it's about big wave chasers. And I tell you what, I understand these people who, you know, just spend their life chasing waves and the endless summer thing. And, you know, I texted you this morning, Chris, that I wish that I'd really gone after being a surfer when I was a younger man.
Me too. I wish I would have learned it when I was young. Like when I was in my early 30s, I was in Mexico and I rented a surfboard and tried it. They're like, okay, here you go. Nobody showed me any lessons or anything. I just about killed myself and I couldn't even stand up on it. It's really hard.
It's really hard. I had the same problem. I took one lesson in Hawaii and they gave me a surfboard that they called the sofa because it was just huge. They said, anybody can get up on this. Well, yeah, but it just was, and I was pretty young and fit at the time, and just paddling it out was a monster. But anyway, they've certified this wave. 36-year-old German, he surfed it in October of 2020, but they've now confirmed the height. It was 86 feet off of Portugal, and it's just incredible. But it took the Guinness World Records 18 months to verify the height of the wave. But just watching it is mind-blowing. It's great. Want to hear my one story that... See, I mentioned this last time Chris was producing. Nicole's heard all my stories and hates it if I repeat one, but I don't think I've told this one for a long, long time. Want to hear my how I know I would have been born to surf story?
Sure, and it's not too late. You can still try it.
Oh, I know. I know. I truly believe in that. So the first time I ever went to Hawaii, our girls were really little. And we didn't have any money back then. We rented a condo that was across the street from the beach because we couldn't afford beachfront. But I got a boogie board, and it was there was a nice little surf break on the beach right across the street from where we were, and I just wasn't getting the hang of it because I'd never been to Hawaii before, and I'd never tried any kind of surfing, body surf or surfboard or boogie board. I've never tried. And I just wasn't getting it. And there was this guy next to me, and he looked like he was probably 55, 60. But you know those guys who are in the sun all day, every day, and their skin gets real leathery. But, oh, my gosh, he was a magician on the paddleboard. And so after watching him for about a half hour, I got up the nerve. And I paddled over to him, and I said, hey, I've never done this before. You're just awesome to watch. Could you give me some pointers? And he goes, oh, yeah. And he did, and I picked it up really fast, given the pointers that he gave me, and it was really cool. And then as we were, you know, bobbing in the waves, you know, waiting for the next boogie board wave, he and I just started talking. And I asked him... I said, what do you do for a living? And he said, you're looking at it. And I go, no, to make money. And he goes, no, this is all I do. And what's all you do? He said, I just come out here and I play in the water all day, every day. And I go, oh, you're retired. Well, what did you do? No, this is all I've ever done. And he started telling me the story about how he knew when he was really young that he just felt connected to the ocean. And so he decided to build his life around just playing in the ocean every day. And I said, were you married or are you married? Do you have kids? He goes, nope. And I go, so you don't have any family? I go, oh, yeah. I got family everywhere in the country. You're my family now. I mean, he was just one of those, you know, kind of Hawaiian philosopher type guys. And he goes, no, wherever I go, I have people that I know and I can crash on their couch or on their porch. And I said, well, how do you pay your bills? He said, I know some people who own restaurants up and down the beach. And he goes, I can always, you know, go work there for a few hours or a day or two if I need some money. And I go, do you have an apartment? I was fascinated by this guy. And he said, no, I just crash at friends' houses. And he goes, I got a bunch of them, so I don't wear out my welcome. And it was really fascinating to me. And I remember coming back. I was in the early years of doing this talk show. And I thought this was one of the greatest topics ever in my early years. Because I asked the question, this is back when we used to take phone calls from listeners, and you know, we're just trying to hear your comments on these things. But here I was in the earliest stages of my career, a career I had dreamed of having, and it was so exciting that I'd just gotten my radio talk show on Cairo, the big dog. And I was, you know, looked forward to having a good long career, which miraculously has happened. But here's a guy who, when he was young, he felt connected to the ocean, and he completely constructed his life to just bob in the water all day, every day. And I'm sure he had a lot of conversations like the one he had with me, and it was fast. It was memorable. It's been probably 25 years, and here I am still remembering it and still telling you about it. But I remember asking the question. My topic that day for the radio show was, is that a life well lived? When it's so hedonistic. I mean, his entire life was about just doing what he wants to do. And I've always found pleasure in serving others, you know, whether it's, you know, my wife or my kids or, you know, the kids I've coached or my community, whatever. I've always found pleasure in that. And I would feel if I was, because he was probably about the age that I am now. If right now I was crashing, instead of sitting in my studio in my house, if I was just always crashing at friends' houses and tomorrow was going to be exactly the same as every day for the last 30 years, I'm just going to go out and bob in the ocean. And it was fascinatingly divided in the opinions that I got. A lot of people said, no, that's not why we're here on this earth, just for our own personal pleasure. And that's not what life should be about. And it's ultimately meaningless. And then a bunch of people who said, of course, if you're happy, that should be what everybody aspires to be. And the guy that I described to them, he sounded very happy. And he sounded very, very happy. And so I've thought about that often. I've thought about if that's, and I personally believe, just because I'm wired so differently, that seems like a wasted life to me.
Just out of curiosity, yeah. Was he an articulate, intelligent-seeming guy?
Very. Very, yeah. I mean, he was captivating, almost poetic in how he talked about everything in his life.
I think the fact that he didn't have a family and chose not to, he's not hurting anyone else.
True.
And he probably is contributing to society in certain ways, like just by talking to you. And
yeah.
You know, I feel like most of us are just out making money and going out to eat anyway. People say they're helping others. We're all just making
exactly.
money and trying to get by. So I think it's pretty awesome.
What life well lived. I'd like to know. I still think it's a great topic 25 years later. So shoot me a text based on the story I just told you. Is that a life wasted or a life well lived? You can text me at 888-973 Cairo, 888-973-5476. I was not planning on talking about any of this, but it ties together with something else that I heard this morning. I woke up this morning and I listened to a podcast. In the Tim Ferriss, I don't know if you guys know who this is, but he's an enormously popular podcaster. He's a great interviewer, and he gets fantastic guests. And so I just laid in bed this morning after I woke up, and I listened to an hour of his podcast, and the guest was a guy named Dr. Edward Thorpe. Dr. Edward Thorpe, back in the early to mid 60s. He wrote a book called Beat the Dealer. He was the first guy to take a computer to optimize how you play blackjack. And this guy was a gambler, and he wrote the book. I devoured that book. And when I was 21, I went to Reno, and I was a card counter. And I even got banned from two casinos because I was pretty good at it. But Dr. Thorpe, after that, he invented a wearable computer to beat roulette. It precisely measured how fast the ball was going and how fast the wheel was spinning the opposite direction. And it was able to, with reasonable accuracy, predict where the ball would fall into which slot. And he had trained an accomplice to bet, to put the chips down as soon as the computer. This is back in the 60s, believe it or not. Then he's a genius guy, and he didn't just spend his life with gambling. Dr. Thorpe, then he started a hedge fund and made a ton of money by beating the stock market. And now his focus is fitness and personal fitness. He's 89 years old. He sounds like he's about 50. He looks like he's about 60, but he's 89. And he was talking about, you know, his mania for fitness. I just ordered his autobiography on Kindle after I listened to the podcast this morning. But he told a story. I'll make this real quick. I know I'm running late here. Dr. Thorpe told a story this morning to wrap up the podcast with Tim Ferriss. It was a story of, is it Joe Heller? I think it's Joe Heller who wrote Catch-22 and Kurt Vonnegut who wrote everything else. And they were at a party once in New York, and it was a very wealthy hedge fund manager. And he had, you know, private yachts and private jets and models hanging off his arms. And, you know, Joe Heller said to Kurt Vonnegut, you know what? We will never have as much money as this guy. But I have something that he will never have. And Kurt Vonnegut said, what's that? And Joe Heller said, enough. I have enough. I'm not always looking for something else. And the whole point of the story was that if you make enough money so that in your retirement you can just do things you enjoy, like my boogie boarding buddy, if in retirement you can, you know, you still go to your friends and family memorial services and you still have to put your taxes together. I mean, you've got stuff you got to do that you don't enjoy. But once you have enough, then you can just spend your life doing what you enjoy. But it does, for most of us, take a little financial freedom to do that because we don't want to just sleep on a friend's porch our whole life. Wow! I seriously had no clue I was going to talk about any of those things. It all started because I just found out Alan White died from Yes. So that was your completely random Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Go check the news, and then Brandi Crouse is going to drop by for a visit. That is next here on the Dory Monson Show.
You've been talking in your sleep, and it's been going on for weeks, and I've been solving puzzle pieces. High time to come to Jesus. You got skeletons in your closet.
Well, this is just absolutely above and beyond the call of duty. Brandi Crouse usually joins us on Thursday afternoons. I said, take this Thursday off if you want. But she is joining us from a beach in parts unknown. Hello, Brandi.
You know, not only that, an undisclosed location, but your producer is also joining you via me from a beach in an undisclosed location. In fact, I'm curious, Dory, what's the weather like there?
It's cloudy and about 58.
Well, Nicole and I are currently looking out at the ocean, and I can tell you it's maybe, 85 and sunny. So I just wanted you to know.
Wow. Hey, look at this. I just pulled up weather on my phone. It's exactly 58. I was just guessing.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm really happy for both. And what is this, a bachelorette party?
Yeah, Jessamine, who, of course, is a mutual friend of all of ours, is getting married. And so we're here for her bachelorette party. Again, undisclosed location. You know, we want to keep it low key.
Yeah. You know, I'm losing all my kids Jessamine and Brandy, they went on a cruise with me and my family a couple of years ago, and now Jessamine's going off and getting married. You and Nicole are going to be married before I know it. Well, maybe.
Well, hopefully. You talked to my boyfriend about that.
we have. okay. Hey, there is some news I wanted to talk with you about. You wrote a piece on your Patreon site a few days ago saying we shouldn't have to celebrate common sense, yet here we are. And you were praising Mayor Bruce Harrell, and you and I think, have a very different perspective on this guy. So let's have a little point-counterpoint. You go first.
Sure, and I imagine when we're done talking, we'll realize that our perspectives are actually pretty similar. But the point of the article I wrote was like, look, you know, Seattle has a long way to go to turn around. I don't know that, you know, Bruce Harrell has a long way to go, but he's doing things and saying things that are just, you know, something we haven't seen from city leadership in such a long time. And the bar was so, so low going into his term in office that any momentum, anything at all, is worthy of celebrating. And I've said at the beginning that I want to be Team Bruce Harrell. I want to encourage him to do the things he said he was going to do on the campaign trail. For instance, we have seen a lot of sweeps of some of these problem homeless encampments. He's followed through on those. I think that's a great thing. You know, he has come out and said, made very obvious statements like, hey, we're not going to allow prolific shoplifting in our city. We're just not going to. And that sounds like real common sense, something we shouldn't celebrate. But right. Because, you know, that common sense had been lacking for so long, I think it's, and my argument is, it's worthy of celebration. And the final thing that I point out in that article, which is something I hope he can maintain, Bruce Harrell has not shown that he cares what, like, the stranger or the far left fringe Twitterati say about him. And I think that's something that Mayor Jenny Durkan had a hard time with. That's why she just willingly gave up 6 square blocks of the city to the top protesters, is because she was so scared of angering that far left fringe. I get a sense that Bruce Harrell doesn't care quite as much, and I think that that is going to be a good thing.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. Here's why I'm not in the same place you are with this guy. Because a few weeks ago, Brandy, I played on my show 8 sound bites of Bruce Harrell from 2015 to 2018, when he was a city council member and city council president. And he talked about all the things that helped ruin this city. He said incarceration causes harm. So he worked to keep people out of jail. He hired criminals to shape our city's legal system. He said incarceration is racism. He wanted to, his quote, decriminalize violence. And when, I mean, violence is a crime. I don't know how you decriminalize violence. So what I'm saying is he actually caused many of the problems that he is now getting credit for fixing. And that's, you know, it's like, you know, somebody shoots a guy in the leg and then wants praise for putting on a tourniquet.
I don't disagree with you that Bruce Harrell has been part of the problem with city leadership that has led us to that point. It's something I brought up repeatedly, even when I was with Fox 13, about his flaw, his fatal flaw as a candidate. And I didn't believe that either of the candidates that made it through the primary election, Bruce Harrell or Lorena Gonzalez, were particularly promising outlooks for the city. Both of them had been in city government. Both of them contributed to the slow and then ultimately rapid downcline, decline of the city. But of the two, Bruce Harrell was the better of two not ideal options. And I also believe in the ability of people to come around to reality. And I think we've seen Bruce Harrell do that a little bit. You know, he's from Seattle. This is home for him. Oh, and I do get a sense that he is disappointed in the city it has become. And, you know, through my conversations with him and interviews with him, I think he acknowledges that, you know, he was on the city council during a time where these crises were getting worse and worse, you know, homelessness, crime, drug abuse. So I don't think that it absolves him of the things he's said and done in the past on the city council. But if Bruce Harrell wants to step up in 2022 and sweep dangerous homeless encampments, clear problem areas of crime in the city, I'm going to be his cheerleader, because I think that some, and this is where it all comes from. I do believe that positive reinforcement from people who have been the most critical of city government is going to go a long way to making sure that he does not fold to those loud, small group of activists.
Yeah, that's all fair. That's all fair. And I am watching everything. And I've said very nice things about the sweeps that he's done and the, you know, putting the temporary police precinct on Third and Pine. All of those things. You know, the day of service, did you participate in that last Saturday?
No, I wasn't in town, but okay. I watched it unfold on social media. I realize that's not the same thing, but yeah, I was on the top.
I had some really good friends who don't even live in the city, but they went into the city to participate in it. But I also was gone. But, you know, that's another thing where we let the city get in such horrible condition. And this isn't about Bruce Arrell anymore. This is just in general. You know, we've got graffiti everywhere. We have trash everywhere. We still have some downtown blocks that look like third world nations. We pay more than we've ever paid per capita, adjusted for inflation. We pay more in taxes than we have ever paid. And then they say, hey, volunteers, come on down. And that, I love that it brought people together. And I'm not critical of the event. I'm sorry that the people we pay very, very well to take care of those things and those issues don't just take care of them themselves.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you on that one. It shouldn't have gotten to a point where we needed 1,000 people or however many showed up to do some of these things. But, you know, as a conservative, which I believe that you characterize yourself as conservative, you know, we realize that the government is not the solution to our problems. And when we've seen the city become what it is, for residents to go out there and to say, you know what, we're not going to watch the fabric of our city decline. We're going to do something about it and show that we still care. And also, I think it demonstrates Bruce Harrell's ability to bring people to the table and to say, you know, we're going to, you know, to have this event and have so many people from a variety of backgrounds and places show up to help, I think shows that he can be a bridge builder. And I think it's promising. And also, he was out there doing the work. And I was told not just for photo ops. He was actually going around and putting work in. I mean, they took a lot of pictures. But for him to be out there, I give him kudos. I have said from the beginning that I'm going to be Team Bruce Harrell until there is a very, very obvious reason not to be, because that positive reinforcement, I think, is going to be the ticket.
Got it. All right. By the way, I do not classify myself as a conservative.
What are you these days?
I'm a Dorytarian. I look at every story, and in all seriousness, I think if you say I'm a conservative, then you look at a story and say, well, I have to give a conservative viewpoint on this. And same with libertarianism, and same with liberal. I just like looking at stories and then giving my gut reaction to them, and maybe more than that, my considered reaction. All right.
Yeah, and what I would say is, what I do know about you, though, regardless of label, is you definitely don't think that the government is the best functioning entity to
is 100%
solve things.
What do you have coming up on your Patreon this weekend?
Yeah, well, I actually have an interesting interview airing tomorrow on the podcast. Obviously, the Texas shooting has just been a tragedy. And one of the things that comes up repeatedly when these mass shootings happen is you have both sides that just talk right past each other, and it doesn't lead us anywhere, as you know. I had a conversation with someone who I have disagreed with on issues around guns and gun control, but she's also a friend of mine. And so we had a really wonderful conversation about it. And you might know who she is. Her name's Emily Cantrell. She is a survivor of the deadliest mass shooting in American history, the Las Vegas shooting in 2017. And that led her on a course to fight for some changes to gun laws in our state. Some changes that, again, you know, she and I, as friends over drinks, have had disagreements about, but I thought the conversation was a really productive one. And also just to realize that people on different sides of this issue, they come at those opinions honestly. It doesn't mean they're trying to, you know, always vilify or demonize. And so I just think it was a really good conversation that can hopefully help guide other people's conversations on this issue. So that's tomorrow on the Undivided Podcast. I'm on a working vacation.
Yes. All right. You can see Brandy's work at patreon.com/undivided from a beach in parts unknown. What do you say the temperature is?
Oh, like, what, 85? Nicole says hello, everyone. She misses all of you.
Wait, is Nicole there? Can I talk to her?
Yeah, she is. You want to talk to her? Here you go.
Yeah, just real quick.
Hello.
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Are you guys wearing sunscreen?
We're wearing lots of sunscreen, even at 10 in the morning.
Okay, because you know that Brandy's like the pasty, whitest person I've ever known.
She is. Oh, she's actually covered up. She makes sure that she wears okay. long yeah. cover-ups, and, you know, she's very covered because she is okay. the pasty whitest person we know.
Have fun yeah. and stay safe. Oh, put Brandy on for one more second.
Okay, no sucky noises while I'm back. While I'm gone, okay?
Stop it. Just stop it.
Okay, here she is.
Thank you, Dory. It was fun.
Remember when we worked together and after our spring breaks, we would always post pictures of our arms next to each other?
I do remember that. Yeah, I don't get tan.
No. I get very dark. We were ebony and ivory.
Yeah, I don't know if that's PC, but I don't think either of us care.
All right, have fun and be safe. Take care.
All right, Dory, this has been the highlight of my vacation so far.
Oh,
right, bye-bye.
Okay, patreon.com/undivided to see Brandy's work. Text us at 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Getting tons of text messages. Apparently, the Seattle man who just died, the drummer for Yes, Alan White, I thought that he was the drummer on Roundabout, but I've been corrected. Many, many people tell me that he joined the band after that. So thank you for that. I'm getting a lot of interesting text messages here. The price of gas is just killing people. Right now, it is so sad. One guy just sent me, Dory, I'm a local dump truck driver. This is what I pay daily. And he sent me a picture of his pump. He put in 79 gallons, and it cost him $474 every single day. That's what he's paying. So inflation is going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. And that makes me very sad because there are a lot of people who can afford it, but there are a lot of people who can't. And if you're a working class person, you know, the story that I always tell, another one of my old stories, but back when gas was, I think, 33 cents a gallon when I was a little kid and my dad was gone, my mom was home alone and one morning, she had to drive me to school, and she was in a panic because she knew her tank was on empty. And I will never forget this. It has been 56 years since this happened, but I remember it vividly. My mom had tears in her eyes, and she was pulling up the cushions on the sofa, and she found a quarter that had fallen through the cushions, and we went, there was a gas station right at the top of our hill, four blocks from our house. And we went up to the top of the hill, and my mom put 25 cents worth of gas in her car. I feel like one of those old guys telling Depression-era stories. Well, my childhood was kind of Depression-era in our family. But I know what that's like. I lived that for my entire childhood, and I've never forgotten that. And that's why I hold on to this day, even though certainly economically my life has turned out much, much better than how it started. But I will never forget those feelings. I'll never forget my mom pulling up sofa cushions. And that's why when I see the obscenity of what's happened and how it has been totally manufactured by this president and his administration, and they're now thrilled because they're trying to get us into all electric vehicles. That was the pledge they made. Well, understand that as oil becomes more and more and more expensive, people are going to die around the world. Nothing has lifted more human beings out of poverty than capitalism, and our economy has been built on oil. And the fact that you can fly around the world and the fact that we can get goods to market and the fact that we could do it relatively affordably until Joe Biden became president, as inflation hits, it's going to have a tremendous ripple effect, especially in third world nations where, mothers won't be able to feed. We can't get baby formula now, even with the airlift. But in third world nations, where there's always been starvation issues, you wait until the inflation rocks the worldwide economy. Another text message. Dory, I'm a private pilot for over 30 years. I just put gas in my plane and paid over $7.60 a gallon for aviation fuel. That's from, he says, Joe Biden has just destroyed another billion-dollar industry. Depression is on the way. So sad. Yeah, I mean, right now, a recession is the good possibility. Because a depression is a real possibility, and it will have worldwide effects. And then we've got Jay Inslee and Joe Biden celebrating because you got to buy an electric car now. This is insane. It's got to stop. It's up to the people to make it stop. Okay, we're going to check the news for you. Some outrageous local government pay raises that we're going to tell you about in the big lead coming up next.